Hey, it's Jonas Knox, Brady Quinn, Outkick the Coverage here, Fox Sports Radio. Coming up on the show, an epic performance by Kevin Durant. What does it mean moving forward for not only the Brooklyn Nets, but the Milwaukee Bucks and their franchise? Speaking of the state of Wisconsin, Aaron Rodgers is talking, and it just continues to feel more odd as the days pass by. Speaking of odd, a coach in the NFL talking about his quarterback situation. We're not quite sure what the heck he's doing. And Shannon Spake is here, a tradition unlike any other. It's Outkick the Coverage. Jonas Knox, Brady Quinn, next year, Fox Sports Radio.
Outkick the Coverage live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
The man himself, Brady Quinn.
You know, Jonas, there's going to be two ways that we're going to handle today and two ways you can view last night's game. Some are going to call it one of the greatest gag jobs of all time, okay?
Yeah.
And others are going to call it one of the greatest performances of all time by maybe the greatest player in the NBA. That is how this will be talked about. I don't know why it has to be one or the other. It can kind of be both. But I think as we found in this country, you got to pick a side. You know, you can't actually talk with any reason. You can't actually talk with, you know, any I guess a semblance of agreement with both sides. It's got to be one or the other.
Yes,
that's what was interesting is I think for all those people who turned the TV off at halftime of last night's game, you missed one hell of a performance by Kevin Durant. You also missed the fact that if you're a Bucks fan, you got to be so frustrated with this team. And Charles Barkley, Charles Barkley talked about it at halftime. He literally said it at halftime. He said, they're up 16 and they should be up by 30. They take bad shots. Schematically, they don't take advantage of mismatches as much as they should. And they're still up 16. He literally breathed the comeback into existence, telling Bucks fans, as much as you're up right now, you're still playing awful basketball, and it came down in the end to bite them. So, yes, both can be true. Both teams, one can gag it, and the other one can have a great comeback by one of the best players, maybe one of the best scorers we've ever seen in the NBA.
Yeah.
But both can be true.
First of all, Durant is a flat-out murderer. I mean, 48
Slim
minutes.
Slim Reaper, man.
Yeah, listen, played the entire game and was unbelievable. Just some of the shots he was hitting, especially in the clutch down the stretch, there was no answer for it. The conversation had been out there, is he the best player on the planet? Look, man, it's hard to argue. I mean, it's hard to argue just based on the performance he put. And this isn't prisoner of the moment type stuff. There was a lot of those conversations that were happening when he was winning finals MVPs and he was outplaying LeBron James in those finals. I've always been a Durant guy. I've always been a fan of his game. Like he reminds me a lot of Larry Bird, like a more skilled Larry Bird, but reminds me a lot of a guy who handles the ball. He doesn't want to be 7 feet tall, but he basically is 7 feet tall and can just hit a shot whenever he wants to hit a shot. And some of the threes he was making, the drives to the basket, all of that is wonderful. All of that is great. It was an all-time historic performance. It's going to be one of those games that you look back on when they roll the credits on his career. That's going to be one of the go-tos, and they're going to talk about James Harden, who not only was he not 100%, I don't even know if he was 20% James Harden. You had Kyrie Irving, who was still out. But you also got to give some credit. Jeff Green, 7 threes. Like, that was huge off the bench. They were fantastic down the stretch. And the second half of that game, they took that game from Milwaukee. But you got to have willing participants. And when the Milwaukee Bucks decide that we're going to go ahead and we're just going to kind of coast through this a little bit, and then we're going to fumble the ball around, and Giannis can't hit free throws, and then, you know, when you've got James Harden, and they were making this point afterwards, when you've got Giannis in the block, he can get to the basket whenever he wants. Whenever the hell he wants, he can get to the basket. We talked about it last week. He takes two steps from the 3-point line, and he's at the rim. Like, he's got that sort of athletic gift. And when you've got Giannis down on the low block, And James Harden, who's on one leg and a shell of who he is when he's 100%, is guarding him. And also a guy who's never been known for his defense. You've got every possible advantage you could possibly want. And James Harden waves off the double team and Giannis settles for a fadeaway. That is a terrible look. And Charles Barkley said it after the game. He said, look, I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't feed those guys on the plane back. He said I wouldn't feed them. He goes, that was as good as of a performance that was for Kevin Durant. That was equally as terrible of a loss for the Milwaukee Bucks, and their fan base has got to be losing their minds. But at least it's okay because they got their quarterback who's fired up about Packers football coming up. So we're fine here. Don't worry about it. Everything's fine.
I do think James Harden being out there was evident he wasn't healthy. You know, you said maybe 20%. It was probably a little bit better than that. Although he couldn't run. He couldn't really have any sort of quick movement.
No.
He seemed like he was a liability at times. I was texting you throughout. I said, watch all his shots be short because he just doesn't have any legs. You know, and even though he shoots a set shot anyway, he just could not get enough on it. But I think that's one of those things where when you're at home, your team needs some sort of optimism or inspiration. As much as we act like at the next level, it doesn't matter. It mattered. It mattered. It really did, in my opinion. Just him being out there, I think it changes the perception of him a little bit. You know, a guy who's never won a championship, who's obviously trying to go for that, doing all he could. He knew he was going to be needed. And Steve Nash talked about how they left the decision up to James. And he wanted to be out there, and he wanted to try to give it a go. So I'm not sure what that'll mean for the next two games. That's the first time we've ever seen a player, you know, in the case in Durant, hit 49 points, 15 rebounds, what, 10 assists? Is that what it was?
He was incredible.
I mean, it was unbelievable. But to your point, Jeff Green stepped up. I thought Blake Griffin stepped up. And then on the flip side, the bench didn't play as well for the Bucks, and P.J. Tucker offensively was nowhere to be found. And I know we're like, oh, what does that matter? Well, in a tight game, it matters. You know, when the guy had, how many points did he have the last game? 13, 17 points?
Yeah, he's always a contributor. He's mostly known for his defense, but when you get any sort of offensive production and then the following game, he's nowhere to be found, especially in a tight game like this. I mean, come on, man.
Right.
You got to hit shots.
Those threes, those shots, they make a difference. They make a difference. They did in game four. And that's one of the reasons why they were able to win and kind of build some momentum when you've got everything working in unison. So that's one of the biggest differences. I also wonder this. Do they come back if there's not fans? Because I don't know if they do, man. Like, I think if you're not playing at home, it got to a point where in the fourth quarter I'm watching this, and I started asking myself that question because you got a sense that, like, Kevin Durant feeds off that. A lot of athletes feed off of that. It's almost like if people have ever been in a fight, and when you've got all these people around you kind of rooting for you, you get the sense of, like, yeah, like, no matter what happens, like, they've got my back. And it's kind of a freeing feeling. And I just thought he shot the ball with reckless abandon. I mean, not saying that he took bad shots, but the shots he was hitting down the stretch, to me, it seemed like he was just even playing with more confidence. Almost like he knew that at the end of the game, like, or if they could keep it close, like, they were going to win it because they were playing at home. Because watching him in game four, he looked defeated. It looked like he was out there just trying to figure out who else he could rely on. And after the first half, you would have thought he would have felt no different because the Nets played awful in the first half in comparison to the Bucks. But then in the second half, they turned it on. And it's the last thing I'd say is, you know, it's funny how in a series like this, you can kind of have those ebbs and flows, and the next game's always the biggest. But this is the one that we talked about was kind of going to be like the backbreaker. Like obviously, we felt like it had to go six, but I don't even know that it goes seven now. Like, I am kind of curious to see if the Bucks can rally, if they can go back home and try to make something happen. Because their best player in the moment when it mattered most, when Giannis had the ball, I think it was like 30 seconds left, whatever it was, down by two, down in the block, Jeff Green was guarding him, and somehow that ball slips out of him. Like, that was the moment where I was like, oh, forget taking a fadeaway shot versus Harden. When you've got the ball with 30 seconds left, you're on the block, and you somehow lose it, and you allow Jeff Green, who's, you know, way smaller, it's a mismatch, and somehow the ball gets loose, gets knocked out. That was it. That was the ball game. I was sitting there watching it going, Yeah, that's going to be the play that I come back to and go, if this game goes into overtime, we'll see if the Nets continue this momentum and hot streak. But it was that moment where you needed your best player to step up, and he couldn't, not like Durant did.
Well, I also felt myself, and look, there's a lot of reasons to for people out there, that for fans to root against the Nets, because they go, oh my God, well, they got all the three best players, and Kyrie Irving is a bit of an odd bird, and James Harden quit on his team, and Durant's just a front runner, so they're an easy team for a lot of fans to dislike. I felt myself rooting for him last night. I just wanted to see him pull it off because they were so compromised. And I just wanted, because I've always loved Durant, like I said, I wanted to see him pull that off. I wanted to see him have that moment to where he unequivocally was the best player on planet. You can debate it for whatever you want, but for at least a night, he was the best player on planet Earth. Giannis said it afterwards, and I found myself rooting for them. And if you asked me that 2 months ago, not a shot in hell, because there were a really easy team to not like, but I found myself rooting for the Brooklyn Nets, and I think a lot of people found themselves rooting for it just to see if Durant could pull that off. And with all this being said, who knows? Maybe they won't win another game, and all this is a moot point. But for right now, we're talking in the moment.
It was interesting that they announced all NBA teams, and Durant didn't make one.
Yeah. Well, listen,
Kyrie at least made third team.
Yeah, there's some people that are bothered with some of the names.
It was Harden who didn't make it. Durant made it. Durant was first, right?
Well, yeah. There's also some other guys that were no shows on the All NBA team. But point being,
you don't want to get into that right now.
Well, listen. I mean, I just the whole debating NBA MVPs. It feels like people focus so much on the individual awards in the NBA, and they turn it into this knock on somebody else, and it just wears me out. I just think some of the conversation around the NBA player awards just bother me. Like you don't see this same thing happen in the NFL. Like whatever. Like somebody makes a Pro Bowl and you go, yeah, well, he's an alternate. Big deal. Like they kind of scoff at it. It's like in the NBA, like if you get held out of a list, somebody's out to get you and there's no respect, and then you run to Twitter and put up some emojis. It's way too much drama for me.
Right. It's like Tonya Harding's crew's gonna come in and they're gonna make sure they fix that next time.
Exactly. Listen,
right?
And sometimes you gotta handle things that way.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
Did we have a statement made in the NFL? An interesting conversation involving a superstar in the NFL. And we'll have the very latest on that coming up a little over 10 minutes from now here on Fox Sports Radio. But right now, she is always kind enough to join us, and she is a damn TV star. A damn TV star. I'm doing stuff around the house, and I look up, and there's Shannon Spake on television, looking dapper as usual.
Looking good.
It's what she does when she's not with her husband, and they're pulling snakes out of the water that are like 90 feet long. It's like she's basically on the set of Anaconda, and she's like pulling snakes out of a body of water. She is doing great television for Fox Sports One, and she joins us now here on Outkick the Coverage. Shannon, what's happening?
I see what you're doing there. You're trying to compliment me, but you're also letting the bosses know that you always have FS1 on at home. So much so that you're like just randomly doing like work around the house and watching Race Hub on a, I guess it was a Thursday night.
Damn right.
Shannon, yeah. Jonas brought up a great point. I feel like you could have easily played the role of Jennifer Lopez in Anaconda. I mean, have you acted before? Like, could you have jumped into that role, you think?
So working at FS1 and Fox Sports, we do a lot of like spoofs, right? Like we do a lot of like music videos, or we just have a lot of fun on set, like leading up to some of our racing shows. And I've learned over the years that I'm not an actress at all. I can't, right? I can't keep a straight face. Some people are just like so good at it, and I like to think that I am. And you always think like, oh, I could do that, but no, not an actress. And I couldn't. And first of all, Jennifer Lopez, like, she's reverse aging, so that's quite the compliment. And if it's the snakes that are doing it, I'm all in.
Okay, very good. It's
not a problem for you, then. You got plenty of snakes.
Well, listen, I've got to ask you the question, because I was thinking about this. Like, how is this going to go? Like, where the hell are you going to go with this answer? Because you cover so many different sports, not just NASCAR, but obviously, football and work on the sidelines, and been doing this for as long as you have. We were talking about the great performance of Kevin Durant last night. night and just, you know, one of the great individual performances we've seen. But for you up close and personal, like, what are some of the individual performances that you have seen that you will take with you later on and you can tell people about, you know, for the longest time about, I was there when this happened from so-and-so at this sporting event?
Yeah, so I did write some stuff down. I actually, just so the bosses know, I wake up early to listen to the start of your show so that I know exactly what you're talking about.
Awesome.
There you go. So I did quickly. It's hard to kind of like jog my brain when there's been so much. And I think of a lot of like performances are individual performances in the moment. Like a guy like Saquon, right? I know that he's battled injuries as of late. But when that dude breaks loose and gets through that line and he can do some of the stuff that he does, you just go, wow, right? In that moment, you go, wow. But some of the larger stage performances, so the 2015 National Championship, Duke versus Wisconsin, Grayson Allen came to play. And I remember after that game, Coach K saying something like, well, now everyone is going to know who Grayson Allen is, because I just remember him sort of taking over that game as I think he was a freshman too in that game. And Anthony Davis, I covered the national championship, Kentucky, Kansas. And yeah, I remember he literally would like defend on one end and then like he would be down at the other end shooting a three or shooting a two. And nobody knew at that time that he had the range to shoot all those threes. And Coach Calipari just let him go in that game. And I remember just being like, whoa, we were just like back and forth and back and forth with AD. Amir Abdullah in a Nebraska-Miami game, dude ran for 229 yards. And I just remember it was such a cool environment, first of all, because it was at Nebraska. And Brady, I know you've probably played there before, but that environment at night, and it's a Miami game, and it was Bo Pelini who would just lose his mind on the sideline if you ever watched him. And that performance by Amir was really good. And then I think just long-term, I covered the 2015 Kentucky Wildcats from start to finish, and watching Karl Anthony Towns over that season become the player that he would eventually become, because he wasn't, at first. And Calipari was so hard on him, and I was able to watch a lot of those practices one-on-one in preparation for their run in the tournament. I was embedded with them that year because they were undefeated, and so watching Karl Anthony Towns sort of come into his own was a pretty cool thing as well. So there,
Shannon,
you go.
I'm going to ask you, just because you brought up Kentucky, it's a complete tangent, but I also have a lot of buddies who went to Kentucky, and they're always clamoring about the basketball program, yada, 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 everything else that comes along with it. Why haven't they had sustained success? Because if I'm not mistaken, that year they had a great regular season, maybe even SEC tournament, but I don't think they ended up winning it, did they?
No, they didn't. They lost to Wisconsin in the Final Four.
That's right.
And then Wisconsin went on to play Duke in the Final Four. They almost lost to Notre Dame in the Elite Eight. I remember that game. And I just remember sitting there. I was literally embedded with this team. I hadn't seen my family in like 6 weeks, right? Because I would go from the tournament location to Lexington to watch them practice, to be with that team, to walk to class with those guys. Devin Booker was on that team, by the way. It was so much fun to watch those guys. They did not win. I remember it just being like, the behind the scenes after that game, just watching those kids, the look of shock, even with John Calipari, just the look of shock.
Yeah, Shannon, let me tell you a little behind the curtain here. The only reason Brady brought that up to ultimately end the Kentucky story in heartbreak because they lost is because he likes to ride his friends when it comes to the Kentucky Wildcats and likes to get under their skin. So if they are listening to this, he wanted them to be reminded that they came up
short
that
year. Win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was all an elaborate ruse by Brady Quinn to bust chops here.
Shannon, I'm just saying, you followed the team. You had intimate knowledge.
Yeah.
And so I want to make sure that you were able to review that year that they were so great but not able to win a national championship. I do remember exactly where I was, though, for that Notre Dame-Kentucky game. And I'm not scared to admit it. All right? I was at my buddy's wedding in Napa. I left the reception. I found an Irish bar. I was there with like 60 other people. And we were beside ourselves because, look,
they should have won.
Well, I don't know if they should have or shouldn't, but they are close. And I'm like, there's no way they should be close with the Kentucky Wildcats, given how talented that team was. So just the fact that it was close, I think, was it Jerian Grant who had that last second shot that I think Karl-Anthony Towns like ran down the entire court with him the whole length, ended up missing. But I remember that moment just thinking, like, there's no way those guys should have even been close to Kentucky, and yet they still were able to at least have a shot to win it, I think, in the end.
Do you remember when that team, the platoons, like the very first game, and I want to say maybe it was against Kansas, like in a tournament early in like November, where they came out and they were like the Monstars, right? Where they had their pictures, because that's what they looked like from Space Jam. Like they were so big, and then all of a sudden, here came five more. And then when those five got tired, here came five more. And what John Calipari did that year was so unique. Personally, like watching that team, I just think that it got to them every single weekend. It was, I mean, and I watched them get close in games where it would be like 6 or 7 minutes and Georgia would be up, or 6 or 7 minutes and Texas A&M would be up on them. And then they would just turn it on, right? They would just turn it on. And all of a sudden they've got a 15-point lead in the last 5 minutes. I just think that they just ran out. They ran out of whatever it was, because that was a really long season for those kids. They were under a ton of pressure. Every single weekend, what's it like to be undefeated? It's undefeated. It's undefeated. They had camera crews following them. It was because they wanted to do a documentary when they did go undefeated. I just think it got to them. They're 18. Those were all freshmen. They were 18 years old coming in and playing in one of the biggest organizations and one of the biggest fan bases out there.
See, I've wondered that as well, too. And you talk to these coaches. Shannon Spake joining us here on Fox Sports Radio, Outkick the Coverage. Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox with you here on FSR. I wonder how many of these coaches, like, I'll bet if you ask Belichick, he would have rather the Patriots, that team that lost, that was trying to go undefeated and lost to the Giants in the
right?
Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I'll bet if you ask some of these coaches, they would rather have lost a game in the regular season just to get it out of the way. Because I think that was the quote when Calipari said there was a tight game early in the tournament, and I think it was one of my favorite quotes because he told him, he's like, yeah, I just told my guys, just land the plane. He goes, it's going to be bumpy, but just land the plane. Don't crash it, okay? I'm okay with it, especially early on, but just land the plane. And I wonder how many of those coaches, although they'll be upset with a regular season loss, look at it and go, ultimately, that's the best thing moving forward because at least we got it out of the way.
Yeah, no, there's zero question. I heard a story one time about a team that was playing overseas, and they, you know, an NFL team, and they really wanted to win the game overseas, and they didn't win it, and they wanted to win it because there was this really cool trophy. They ended up winning the Super Bowl at the end of the year, and I think it was the head coach that looked at someone, was like, do you still want that trophy from beginning and, you know, the beginning of the season? And it's like, no, this is the trophy that we wanted. We wanted, you know, the Lombardi Trophy, wanted the Super Bowl trophy. There's absolutely zero question, and I've heard many coaches say that. Right, we needed that loss, we needed that close win. We needed to be kind of punched in the face and shown that we have vulnerabilities and places that we can improve. You hear Nick Saban say it all the time. It's one of the things that I carry with me when I train for my triathlon, is that you learn more about yourself when you're under stress, or if you're under duress, or you know, or adversity, or any of that stuff. That's when you learn the most about yourself. I think about that all the time in my daily life because it's so true.
Shannon, last one for me before we let you go. So spider tack in baseball has been this big thing of late in regards to pitchers trying to get an advantage, right, on grip and spin and all that stuff, and whether or not that's the case and if it should be debated, that's not my question for you. It's more in regards to NASCAR. And I'm just kind of curious, too, talking about some of the advantages that maybe some of these, whether it's a pit crew, whether it's the driver themselves, constructing the car, like what are some of the things that are most controversial, you know, good or bad, you know, with NASCAR right now, what they have going on?
Yeah, so we talked about this last week, Brady. With NASCAR, it's inches. It's quarter 100,000th of an inch, right? The size of like a dollar bill can make like a huge difference. And so some of those things you don't see when they go through pre-race inspection, and maybe like their tolerance is off just a little bit because the crew chief and the engineer and the car chief realize that if you put this out of tolerance just a little bit, then that can create a little bit more drag or a little bit more downforce or a little bit more side draft or whatever it may be. So a lot of those things are the tolerances. As far as like pit crews, you know, it's pretty straightforward. You go out and do a faster pit stop than the rest of the guys. I mean, you can't have uncontrolled tires. You can't do this. So it's pretty cut and dry. They're trying. I mean, they over the years have really cut down on a lot of the stuff that you can do inside of the race car. I was just told a story the other day that it was like back in the, I think it's got to be the 80s. I think it was DW, Darrell Waltrip, and like his teammate was found to have something in the gasoline. There was some kind of additive inside the gasoline that would like help the car go faster. And so NASCAR came to DW and was like, hey, we found this. What do you think we should do? And DW was like, I think that you should, you know, we should throw the book at him. You should throw him out. He's like, all right, well, then don't bring your car back next week either because it was in your car, too. It was some kind of story like that. Now, all of that stuff can't – I mean, it doesn't happen as much anymore. And if it – no, I should say we don't hear about that stuff happening because it is so cut and dry and there is so much on the line and you're not going to do blatant examples of that. It is that 100,000th of an inch, right? The size of a dollar bill that can make the biggest difference in some of these cars.
She's one of our favorites. Get her on Twitter at Shannon Spake. She covers that NASCAR for Fox, Fox Sports One. Also, listen, as college football season approaches and the NFL season, we are going to get more into that as well, too. But Shannon, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for popping on. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Shannon.
You guys have a great day.
It is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, so I do want to make sure we have full time for this, Brady Quinn, because there was some curious comments from an NFL quarterback coming up. So I want to make sure we'll get to that here. So that'll be happening in 10 minutes from now, and you will hear from that NFL quarterback. So 10 minutes from now, we will have that discussion. Here's what I want to know. All right, say you were in NASCAR or, you know, pick a sport, like pick any sport. What would be the go-to way to cheat? Like, would you doctor something that was used in the field to play? Would you go PEDs? Like, what are we talking about here? Like how? Because Shannon was mentioning, you know, back in the 80s, they put something in the gas. Now, I don't know a damn thing about cars. I'd love to know what you put in gas to give you an advantage on a racetrack.
I think cocaine. Some sort of drug.
That's
you know,
good.
An upper of some sort.
Yeah, no, that see, that would make a lot of sense. Yeah.
I mean, that's what they use in those little greyhounds. Like, I told you, I sent you an article the other week when we were doing our famous show, Headline
That's Right.
Live.
Yes, that's right.
There was a bunch of greyhounds all hopped up on narcotics. I mean, that's clearly what they try to do to get those things to run faster. But
now, let me ask you this.
Okay, is it as simple as saying to you, cutting weight? Like, I would go through, I'd basically cut 8 pounds, 10 pounds. I mean, if everything's about these milliseconds, you know, of a difference between cars and, you know, everything else, like, wouldn't it help to be 8 pounds less,
well, I mean,
you know, heavy?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you heard this story. Speaking of cutting weight, this is a good one. There was back when Mayweather and Pacquiao fought, one of the stories that didn't get enough publicity was that Floyd Mayweather was allowed to rehydrate using an IV. So he cut weight and then was allowed to rehydrate using this IV, which is illegal according to the Nevada State Athletic Commission, but they let Floyd do it. And if that were anybody else, it probably wouldn't have happened. But because Floyd brings in so much revenue to the state and it's such big business anytime he fights, they kind of let him cut corners a little bit and let him get away with it. Now, personally, I don't see the issue with using an IV to try and hydrate afterwards. I don't know why that's a rule, but it is a rule. And you could look at that as being a little bit of a competitive advantage for Floyd Mayweather, who ended up winning that fight. You know, just saying.
What was if he went across state lines before the fight? Like, let's say he goes to Cali, he goes to Arizona, somewhere.
Like a Barrett Robbins move before the Super Bowl?
I have no idea who that is.
Okay, remember Barrett Robbins of the Raiders went to Tijuana before the Super Bowl and lost his mind? Remember that Robbins at the center
I'm not
for the
sure
Raiders.
That necessarily applies here. I'm not really pointing out the fact that a guy lost his mind. I'm just saying if he went across a state border, got the IV performed, then came back. Is that
That's
deemed permissible?
I don't believe so, but I don't even know how you would monitor that. Like how?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you could easily get away with it.
That's a good point. And so I feel like we're giving out great advice to fighters out there. Yeah, like, listen, like, if you did want to cut corners, this is the move.
This is the show to listen to.
Yes,
all right?
Absolutely.
We will find a way, all right? We'll help you cheat. Even though we have never done anything wrong.
No.
We will help you cut corners, all right?
By the way, I like how you and I are sitting here talking about all the ways that you can bend the rules, and I think we're the last two human beings alive on planet Earth who have never smoked a cigarette or weed. But I like how we're the authority on how to cut corners and break the rules here. Like, how about you and I, huh? Just a couple of Mormons,
guys,
yeah.
You know?
A couple of Mormons and Amish people doing sports talk radio. Yeah, we're the ones telling people how to cut corners and cheat here. That's what we do. All right, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox. This is Outkick the Coverage here, Fox Sports Radio. Coming up next, you will hear from the story in the NFL. It is the number one story, and you will hear from the man himself who is the center of this story, and it's yours next here on FSR.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Aaron Rodgers, who I don't know if you know this or not, Brady Quinn, he's been in the news this offseason, kind of an interesting offseason for him. He was promoting the match, this big ordeal they're going to do that we're all going to get sick of at some point, because it was cool the first couple of times around, and now we're just going to keep trotting out the same foursome or the same two or three guys every single tournament. But it's the Bryson DeChambeau, Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady, Phil Mickelson matchup that they're going to be doing. And so Aaron Rodgers was talking on Bleacher Report. This is via Bleacher Report about his off season. And this were the comments from Aaron.
It's been one of those quiet off seasons you just dream about, where you can just kind of go through your process on your own quietly. And, that's all you can ask for as an older player in the league and someone who's been around for a long time and just enjoys that time to yourself, to just relax, to not be bothered, to not have any obligations or anything going on. And, I think that's what this off season has been about. It's been about really enjoying my time and spending it where I want to spend it and not feeling like I have to go anywhere, not having any responsibilities, but still being an NFL player at the same time. It's been great.
How about that? Mr. Freedom, Aaron Rodgers, just enjoying that freedom, Brady Quinn, as he goes to Hawaii to turn into a hippie in front of our very eyes. Just amazing stuff from Aaron Rodgers there. How about that?
Well, you're also not selling everyone the T-shirt he was wearing. What did that T-shirt say?
Yeah, I'm offended. That was the T-shirt from Aaron Rodgers. I'm offended. Never passive aggressive. He's a straight shooter, that Aaron Rodgers.
I love it, though. It provides this material. It's like a subtle jab at Mark Murphy for Weekends at Murphy, which is coming up.
Yeah.
That tends to be when he does some of his best work, old Weekends at Murphy's.
Yes.
So, look. Here's the interesting thing about that comment is, if he didn't want to have or feel like there's any obligation to the offseason, he shouldn't put $500,000 workout bonus in his contract. Okay. I don't know that you really need to for quarterbacks too, by the way. Like, we've talked about this subject before. It's kind of standard procedure in a place like Green Bay, because it's hard to keep guys up there in the offseason. They'd rather be somewhere else, sunny and warm, training and preparing for the, mini camp and OTAs like we have going on right now. So that is something that kind of comes almost standard sometimes with their contracts, just to incentivize guys to be up in Green Bay participating in the offseason program. And that's something that, he signed up for. He's to the point in his career where he doesn't need to. I mean, he really doesn't need to if he didn't want to, but he's still got it in there. So He's kind of only got himself to blame in regards to at least those monies. And as far as the rest of what he's saying, I think there is a fair amount of, I've gotten to this point in time in my career at, 36 years old. I proved to you that I can still be the best player in the league. I don't really need this at this point in time right now. This is what I need in my life at this point in time right now. And I do think there's a fair amount of like him probably saying, I've given so much of my life to the sport, I would like to start to have some time off. If you recall, Tom Brady started doing this around this age. He started taking off some time to be away during those voluntary portions of the off season to be with his family. And then he would come up for the mandatory portion of things. And we all looked at it and said, well, look how many Super Bowls the guys won. You know, look how he's still playing at this age. Clearly, he doesn't need to be there. I think Aaron, even though he doesn't have the Super Bowls, he has one. But I think he feels similar in regards to, like, I don't need to be there right now. I'll come in there when I need to. And the last thing I'll just say is he's one of those guys that I think is also carrying the torch for the NFLPA and the offseason. In basically saying, we saw what happened last year without an offseason, how things operated. Now we're going into an offseason where I really don't feel like this stuff's for me. Like, I'll be good when training camp comes around. I'll be good when the season comes around. Even though, you know, there's still so many other things they've got to sort out, I do think that's more of his mental mindset as far as how he needs to handle himself as he prepares for the season, if and when he does decide to come back.
You don't think there's some players in that Packers locker room who are getting a little bit fed up with the idea of, well, it's me, I need this time, I'm Aaron Rodgers. It's like, dude, we've been off 5 months. How much more time do you need off to yourself? I just wonder, and I get it. And he was one of the guys that was vocal about the CBA that got agreed to. He was one of the main voices who came out and said, you know, along the lines, I don't know what we're doing. Maybe people just aren't reading into this before they agree to it and just sign off on this. So he's one of the. So I do think that there is an element of that when it comes to, it's kind of sticking up for the NFLPA and kind of, drawing a line in the sand. But man, not everybody has what he has. So there are some guys that have to show up. And I just wonder if there are players in that Packers locker room who are getting a little bit fed up of the Aaron Rodgers, passive aggressive tour and just want some sort of resolution. Like, you're either going to be here or not. And I wonder if that's rubbing people the wrong way.
So this is probably something that bothers you. And it doesn't bother a lot of other guys for this reason. Once he comes back, and Davante Adams or everyone else starts catching passes from him as opposed to Jordan Love, they go, oh, thank God he's back. thank God he came back. You know, right. Thank God he's our quarterback again. That's the unfortunate reality, is he's just that much more talented. And so all those players around, they see what life is like without him, without his experience, without his talent. And they're getting a dose of what the future looks like with Jordan Love right now. And I'm not saying Jordan Love won't be a good player. But I can tell you right now, he is nowhere close to the player Aaron Rodgers is. So even as much as the other players may be watching this and upset about it, the reality is they will be welcoming him back, okay, as their savior, if and when he does decide to come back, because of the contrast between him and Jordan Love.
Well, so it's kind of like, the following year when I didn't go to your golf tournament, like, you guys felt the same thing. Like, you felt like, man, there's
we actually had
here.
The biggest year we'd ever had.
Thank
Raised
you.
More money than we ever good had. Guy. And actually, we had great reviews.
Yeah, good person. Screw you, Brady Quinn. 2 more hours of these shenanigans next.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.